Warning. Warning.
This show contains mature content. Listener discretion is advised.
Are you ready to get your mind blown?
One angry New York City Puerto Rican decided to start a radio show. Determined to piss the world off by shoving a mirror in front of society's face. He kicked them in the balls.
What are you? Who are you?
This is the Crotch Shot Radio Show. Crotch Shot Radio Show.
This is not a test. This is an broadcast transmission.
We're going to stay on the air.
And now, the wimpy, the wimpy.
Welcome to the Crotch Shot Radio Show, where we kick the issues in the balls. I'm your host, Louis B. I will do anything and everything to attack corruption. Sometimes the ends sometimes justify the means. So if you're angry and want the truth exposed, then strap and then prepare to be shocked. This is Smash Mouth Talk. If you can't accept it, then fuck off. Today will not be any different. I am honored to have Mr. Chris Eads. He was a 2012 Libertarian candidate seeking election for U.S. Senate of New York. Unfortunately, you lost in the general election. You are now seeking the New York Libertarians Party nomination for governor of New York. Chris Eads, thanks for coming on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let's start off with the first question. I mean, direct question. Who are you?
Well, you know, I was kind of an average guy. Just, you know, I work with computers. I was kind of more like an introverted computer geek, wasn't really paying much attention to the world around me. And then, you know, after September 11th, you know, the government started cracking down on everybody and listening to their emails and putting people in jail for no particular reason without a trial, and I started paying attention because that kind of scared me. And then I realized, like, the whole system is corrupt from top to bottom. I mean, all the reasons you're given for the things that happen are complete bullshit, and it actually happened for completely different reasons. And so I decided to get involved and run for office. And, you know, to make a long story short, that led me to on the road that I traversed, and I recently ran for Senate. And, you know, I didn't win, like you said, but I did pretty well, enough to encourage me to run for governor in 2014. And, you know, I'm kind of psyched about that. I try to do what I can do to get the truth out there and make people realize that, you know, the system is entirely corrupt and full of bullshit, you know.
Right.
That seems to be in sync with the general message that I've been listening to here for the past, like, 20 minutes. So, you know, let me put that out there.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, so since you are, since you live in New York, what part of New York are you from?
Rochester. So I live in Rochester. I was born in Rochester and Highland Hospital.
Ah, cool. So as a New Yorker, what are the big issues facing New Yorkers, and how can libertarianism fix it?
Well, I mean, here in New York, I mean, it's pretty much the same across the country, but it's a little more so here in New York. I mean, we're broke. You know, we've been, you know, the economy went south, and, you know, it didn't just hit consumers and average people, and it hit governments all across the country, you know, local, state, national. the money's just not there. The revenue's not coming in, and you know, politicians, they want to get votes, so they say, well, I'm going to pay for this, and I'm going to hand you a check for that, and it's not working anymore because the money isn't there, and they've been making these promises, and they can't keep these promises, and all of a sudden, you know, people have been expecting the government to do things, and it's not there for them anymore, and this is becoming a big problem. I mean, we're paying off the Visa with a MasterCard, and, you know, you can't do that indefinitely. Eventually, you know, your credit cards are going to be canceled.
Yeah, but what are the specific issues, would you say, that are like the most pressing?
Well, I mean, there's the financial stuff. There's also just, you know, basic civil liberties and freedom things. I mean, it's the government, just reads your email. I mean, they're reading your email. I mean, they have like the FBI has this big central office with lots of computers, and basically, you know, everything that you send in terms of an email passes through there, and they look for keywords, stuff like, you know, I don't know, 9/11 or Oklahoma City or bomb or something like that. And if it's flagged, then they start tracking you and they keep a record of stuff. And, you know, and even if, you know, initially, but even if it's just completely innocent, once they start watching you, then they find evidence that maybe you're doing something, or maybe you said, oh, you know, I just bought, you know, some, you know, an ounce of marijuana, and then freaking they come after you and they get you. And like, there's no due process, you know, like it used to be in this country that, you know, if the police wanted to come after you or they wanted to spy on you, they need to go to a judge and get a warrant and show evidence of wrongdoing. And that's not happening anymore. I mean, they just spy on you whenever they feel like spying on you. And, you know, if they dig up some dirt on you, they come after you. And, you know, I think that's, you know, not what our country was founded on. You know, we kind of fought against that. And now, you know, we're doing the same thing. That's a problem.
Okay, well, those seem like problems that are affecting every state in the union right now.
Right.
I mean, because of the Patriot Act and whatnot, and Obama signing something to expand that even further. I mean, but but what I'm talking about as far as what? Okay, how's about we break it down? What about the New York State economy specifically? What is the major issue besides, you know, we're being spent, you know, our politicians are spending money like a bitch.
Yeah, like a drunken teenager with their parents' credit card.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, here in New York, I mean, this is, at least from my perspective here upstate, I mean, the problem is we're all of our decisions, you know, the Democratic Party controls New York, New York City controls the Democratic Party. And, you know, the decisions that are made are basically, you know, made for a city that's basically being, you know, I mean, you've got like the New York Stock Exchange, you've got the whole Wall Street thing, and that pumps a lot of money into the economy. But that doesn't do anything up here. And so you have like very high taxes and like a lot of regulations and, you know, rules that businesses have to follow. There's they made pizza or something, and there's a New York State law that says, you know, you've got to provide fresh shirts every day to your employees. I mean, even if they're just there to work for an hour, like, you have to give them, you know, they own their shirts, they buy their shirts, but you have to give them, like, a fresh shirt every day. Like, I'm not sure how the rules work exactly. Like, I don't remember, but it was, you know, it didn't make any sense at all. You know, there's all these rules you have to follow. If you don't follow the rules, then they fine you. And you can say, oh, well, I don't think that I should be fined. And there's like an appeals process. But like, you know, it takes like a year for them to hear your appeal. And in the meantime, you have to pay the fine. So like, you can just basically be fined out of business for no reason at all. You know, and then, you know, I already mentioned the tax environment. I mean, I think I'm in Monroe County. The county next door, Orleans County, has the highest tax burden in America. Like, literally, the people that live there pay more taxes than anyone else in the country. And so, you know, obviously that's a problem if you're trying to run a business. You know, there's places like down in Binghamton, they have this, and this is like the last thing I'll point out on this little rant I'm going on, but down in Binghamton, they have this problem with flooding. And periodically, like every 4 or 5 years, the river floods and it does millions of dollars in property damage. I was down there a couple months ago. So I was running for Senate and this libertarians down there went to meet with them. I toured the area and I saw like all these houses that were destroyed by flooding and abandoned, you know, and this is preventable. I mean, all of this millions of dollars in property damage is preventable if they could just dredge the river. But they can't dredge the river because there's some kind of species of trout or something, and it would disturb the environmental balance if they dredge the river. So instead, every 4 or 5 years, the river floods, does millions of dollars in property damage. People are forced out of their homes, and, you know, for what? For trout, you know.
Okay, well, I mean, to play devil's advocate real quick, I mean, libertarianism promotes personal responsibility. What are those people doing living in an area that is prone to flooding?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I'm not sure really how Binghamton grew and developed. I mean, here in New York, I mean, we have the Erie Canal. A lot of communities just sort of formed where there were navigable waterways. So that's probably why they, you know, the city of Binghamton exists there and was developed there. I mean, yeah, there's a good point. If the river floods, you should move to higher ground. I mean, definitely, like, I see, like, pictures of, like, California, you know, I mean, they had the tsunami hit them a little while ago. And, you know, I mean, there's people that live on the side of hills, and they, like, have stilts holding up their, like, half their house, and the other half of their house is on the hill, and, you know, obviously that's going to be a problem if the waves hit. So, yeah, I mean, you definitely have a point there, but still, you know, I would judge the river.
Okay. As someone that lives in New York City, I rely on buses and subways to get to work. As governor, how would you fix the MTA?
Well, what's broken with it? Because I'm up here in Rochester, so from your perspective, what are they doing that they shouldn't be doing or not?
Well, okay, the proper I'll use an analogy. Basically, they get as much oversight as the Federal Reserve, and they spend money that they don't have. They say that they're $1 billion in the hole. They're talking about raising the fare by 50 cents. Actually, I don't know if they already decided. They get $900 million a year in revenue from not only the subways and buses, but from the bridges and tunnels, not to mention the tax money that they get, state and federal. And yet they're still in a fiscal hole. And this could also another point, you know, we see in the news that they blame the unions, and the MTA has a very strong union. So, Chris, comments?
Well, you know, I have been following the MTA a little bit, because I remember they wanted to impose a payroll tax a little while ago that they actually didn't have the power to impose, and that went to court, and the court struck it down and said you can't tax these people. So I'm a little bit familiar with the issues. I mean, in terms of the cost from labor and the unions, I mean, the MTA is facing a situation that a lot of organizations and towns and cities and states are facing, which is the pension obligation. And, you know, it's a complicated issue. You know, on the one hand, you know, you might want to say, okay, well, we were, you know, from a union perspective, we were made these promises, and they promised us this, and now they're taking that away. But the larger picture is that basically, I mean, these pension promises, I mean, this is like way more lavish than you or I are going to get from Social Security, like even assuming that Social Security still has money. when we retire, yeah. which is doubtful. But basically, you know, the politicians want to get elected. So politicians, mostly from the Democratic Party, were like, you know, if you vote for me, I'm going to give you all these lavish pensions and benefits and things like that. And so they get into office and, you know, they write that into law. But even before the economic collapse, I mean, they were basing these promises on like wildly optimistic projections in terms of like the pension funds, which are invested in the stock market. Like they were, you know, they were thinking that they're going to do really well and have returns of like, you know, 10 or 15%. But then, you know, the economic crisis hit and they're lucky that these funds are even making a profit at all, you know, let alone like 10 or 15%. So the money's just not there. And, you know, it's becoming a problem because, you know, the promises have been made, the people retire, they're going to get pensions. And then when they actually, you know, crunch the numbers, though, it's actually squeezing out every other vital service. I mean, the MTA as an organization doesn't really do things that provide, you know, police and fire and all that stuff like a municipality, but it's still, you know, you're basically talking about the money that they have promised to pay retirees and the benefits they promised to giving them is, you know, it's becoming such a huge portion of their budget that they can't pay for anything else. And that's why they have to raise fares. And, you know, it's unfortunate that the unions were promised these things, but really those promises were based on like bullshit and lies and things that were never actually going to happen. And the and so, you know, politics so attacks.
How would you fix that as a libertarian? I mean, what's the libertarian solution to the MTA's fiscal irresponsibility?
Well, I mean, that's ideally we would try to put that into private hands. I mean, the thing is with the MTA, I mean, that's a very highly developed system. It's got to be run by, like, at least in New York City, it's got to be run by one organization. But we could, you know, there are other things that could be done. I mean, people have other transportation options. I mean, New York is a very highly regulated environment. There are, like, for instance, there are dollar vans that supplement the public transportation down there that have
those dollar vans are illegal.
Yeah, right.
Because of the powerful taxi limousine and the TLC, Taxi and Limousine Commission. There you go.
Yeah, yeah. So from a libertarian point of view, we should make those guys legal because they are offering a service that people want. Mm-hmm. And they're offering it at a price that's, you know, below the prices that they would otherwise have to pay. I can't step in and resolve all of the labor disputes that the MTA has. But right. I can say, let's legalize the other options. Let's let people have other options like the dollar van. And then if the MTA's fares are too high, well, no one's going to catch the bus anymore. So they're going to have to bring the fares down. And we can let the free market work things out from there. And, you know, it doesn't matter what labor and management do. I mean, they will handle that. And then if that doesn't work out for the consumer, then they can hire the dollar van so they can find another option. So that's right. What I would say.
So, anyways, I'd like to give a big shout-out to people that are listening, Stargate to Eden. There's two Anons in the chat room, Charlemagne. 001 is up in the chat room. You dumbass, if I'm saying it right. And he makes a comment. He's like, is this a state issue or should it be something that the local government should be free to decide for themselves? I don't know what he's referring to, if he could be more specific with his comment or his question. So that way I could get it. If anybody wants to, the MTA. Should the MTA be a state issue, or should be something that the local government should be free to decide for themselves? Because you're saying, you know, provide more competition, more options for people, I believe Adolivant should be legal, but again, playing devil's advocate, the reason why they are illegal is because there are a lot of criminals that would take advantage of that and hurt people.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's always the argument put forth for having more licensing schemes. People are going to try that. I guess the question is, are you willing to trust in your own judgment? If you're not, and you want somebody like the government to make the decision for you, you can do that. But if you should have the right to say, well, I'm going to take the risk. I'm going to talk to this guy. If this guy looks okay to me, I'm going to get in the van. That's a right that I would like to have. I mean, I trust in my own judgment, and, I can roll with the punches and that sort of thing. And I guess, if you're a little old lady, maybe you want to pay a little more, but.
If I could also make the point for the other side, that Dolivan ban in New York City is such bullshit because during the MTA strike and also during the shutdown of the MTA for Hurricane Sandy, they were allowed to run. They were allowed to operate. So in times of emergency in New York City, the Dolivans are allowed to run. So I don't understand why, if it's okay in one situation, it's not okay in a regular situation. And so there's that. A question in the chat is, should New York City be free to be totalitarian if it wants to be?
That's kind of a deceptive question. Cause who wants it to be? I mean, the whole thing about having individual rights and the whole reason we have the Bill of Rights in the Constitution is because the majority cannot just totally walk on the minority. I mean, we have the freedom of speech because, people not to talk about the weather, but because people want to say controversial things and things that get people angry. If I could rephrase the question, if 51% of New York City wants to be totalitarian and, oppress the other 49%, should that be acceptable? Well, I say no. I mean, each and every individual has certain rights. And, if everyone in New York City, 100% of the people want to be totalitarian, that's fine. But if even 80 or 90% want to be totalitarian, the other 10 or 20%, they still have rights. You can't just walk on them even if you have a big majority. That's what I think.
Okay. I guess I'm pronouncing his name. You dumbass, I guess. That's his name. Call in if you want, because you're telling me, I'm kind of getting a little confused. Next question. How would you rate Governor Cuomo?
I'm kind of two minds. Some of the things he's done have been things that need to be done. But on the other hand, he's kind of like a dictatorial type person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the way he operates. I like some of the things he's done, but you see, it's kind of like it's all about him. Like he's definitely got a big ego, and I don't like that. It kind of reminds me of like Mussolini. Like people used to say, like, he made the trains run on time, and that was great, but down the road there were some problems. So, I don't really trust him that much. I like some of the things he's done to try to negotiate with the unions and reduce the pension obligations. Like going back to the MTA thing, I definitely like his push to decriminalize marijuana You know, mm-hmm. those are good things. But I think, like, he's got a really huge ego, and that could be a problem down the road.
Okay. How would you rate how he handled Sandy?
You know, up here, I really don't have the best impression of that. I mean, you could probably educate me more on that, on what happened there.
I've did the Sandy shows. Mayor Bloomberg. He's a jerk. He's so out of touch with the needs of the city. And it was either they were contradicting each other. Either way, their response is slow and still slow. There's still people out there that are homeless, and I mean I'm more rooting for private organizations, private charities over the public, spending tax money to help people out because of the control that comes with it. Like, I mean, you're asking FEMA to come in, and what's FEMA going to do? FEMA's going to put you in a tent, okay, dinner time is this time. You're pretty much going to be in a prison without, you know, yeah, you could walk out, but you're pretty much screwed if you have to rely on them. I mean, Occupy Sandy, and before the government decided to get off its ass and do something, these people were collecting clothes, collecting food, collecting other things to supplies to get to people there, get people in the affected areas. So I'm not impressed with either one of them. Basically, I am sure ready for a third option. So which leads to my next question. Why should there be a libertarian governor?
All right. Well, let me first take on FEMA. You know, one thing I noticed is that FEMA, after Hurricane Sandy, there was like another storm that came through, and they had a sign on their offices that was like closed for the weather. And I think that, you know, that kind of sums up the whole FEMA thing. I mean, you know, they're not actually willing to risk their own butts. In a storm. I mean, they'll come in later and they'll, you know, like you said, dictate what should happen and where you should go and where you should eat. But, you know, they don't want to actually have any trouble. And, you know, they've actually stood in the way of, you know, the reconstruction, because there are people that were coming up from Florida and Georgia and wanted to help. And, you know, they weren't allowed to help because they had to join some union first and, you know, pay union dues. And they were like, we just came to help. We're not going to give you money. And so they were basically turned away and said, like, you can't, you know, you're not allowed to help. And they were pretty angry about that. That process could definitely be improved. Why do you need a libertarian governor? I mean, the whole point of the Libertarian Party is not basically what we're going to do, but what we're not going to do. We're not going to take your money. We're not going to pass laws that have all these rules that tell you what to do. We're going to let you succeed on your own, and we're going to let you fail on your own. And when you put that kind of system in place and you reward success and you penalize failure, you get a lot more success and you get a lot less failure. And that helps everybody. I mean, that's basically a libertarian message. I mean, if you want help for this thing or that thing, or, you know, you feel that, you know, there's some good cause that needs funding, you know, that's not where the Libertarian Party is coming from. There's way too many good causes and not enough money for all of them. And people have to prioritize. And it's not the government that should prioritize, right? I mean, if your brother has cancer and you want to fund cancer research, you know, fund it with your own money. Why should the government take money from everybody and fund cancer research? What if you have muscular dystrophy and you want to fund that instead? You know, and your money is going to cancer research. Well, you'd be pissed off. That's why the decision should be left in the hands of individual people.
Well, I know I'm personally pissed off of the uneven funding between breast cancer research and colon cancer research. And I mean, study and statistics show that more people catch colon cancer than breast cancer. I mean, and look at the whole event that they make it. I mean, you got, when you have NFL wearing pink for breast cancer. I mean, how's that fight breast cancer? Somebody, like, I'm wearing a pink ribbon at my job. I was told that I had to wear a pink lapel pin. But there is no such events there is, but the it's not as big as breast cancer for colon cancer. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, well, you know, so people, I mean, are a lot more interested in the breast than they are in the colon generally.
Well, I get your point. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you don't see. Well, that's a nice big colon you got there, buddy. How you doing? I mean, you're not opening up the fashion magazines like, wow, these pants make my colon look fantastic. You know, I get what you're saying there, but still, I mean, I get what you're saying. But should the government stop funding of breast cancer research?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this should be left.
Oh, war on women. Uh-oh, war on women's health. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, no, I mean, that's what people always say. You know, you don't want your kids to learn if you don't want the federal government to control education and so on and so forth. I mean, the point being, you know, these decisions should be left in the hands of individual people. I mean... I mean, going back to what you said about New York State issues, people are always complaining that New York State gives more money to the federal government than it gets back. Well, okay, let's get rid of that system. Let's stop spending so much in taxes and sending so much money to the federal government and then hoping it comes back to New York State. You know, let people in New York keep their money and decide for themselves how to spend it, and then they'll spend it on what's important to people in New York.
Well, I mean, as someone that lives, you know, downstate in New York City, I mean, the complaint is not only that, but it's like, oh, the money that we pay, most of the taxes that go up to Albany, and it seems like, and I've been to Ithaca, New York, visiting family, and most of Ithaca, New York, except for the college students, are on government assistance, on state government assistance for everything. And I don't see, you know, in New York City, you have to, from the process I've seen, not that I've applied myself, I haven't, but I've like researched the issue. In New York City, you have to go through many steps in order to apply, so that way they can even look at your application. It seems like upstate, all you got to do is, hi, I need some free money, and oh, you get it. Here's a house. Here's a monthly stipend, and here's some extra if you're on drugs, so that way you could go buy yourself some drugs. You know, it's kind of it's silly. I mean, and I've spoken to some of my family members. I'm like, so you seriously not working because you're on government assistance? Oh, well, if I want to get a job, but if I get a job, they're going to take away my government assistance, and most of these businesses are only paying minimum wage. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah. I mean, the whole thing is, if you create a system where people are afraid to get a job because they'll lose their welfare benefits, I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if politicians really cared about helping people get back on their feet, you know, they wouldn't create that kind of situation. I mean, what we have, and this is This is an issue with the way the federal government does things and New York state government does things is, you know, basically there's like a line. And if you, like, it's so many dollars. And if you make less than that, you get, you know, as many dollars of public assistance as you need to rise up to that line. So that means if you work, make a dollar less working, you get a dollar more public assistance. So unless you've got a really good job, what's your incentive to work? I mean, my first job was at the Wendy's restaurant near where I live. And, you know, I would listen to people. I would listen to, like, an older woman telling a younger woman, she's like, you know, you don't want to work too many hours because then you're going to lose your benefits. You know, I mean, it's not just anecdotal. I mean, this is how people live, you know. I mean, it would be so simple to fix. Just say, instead, for every $1 you don't make working, you get a half dollar public assistance. That simple change would put so many people, so many more people back to work because they'd have an incentive to do it. You know, at least the people that weren't, you know, whose main job wasn't selling drugs, and then, you know, they don't, obviously they're not reporting that on their income tax, so they can still qualify for public assistance. I mean, I would just legalize drugs. I mean, it's not like the war on drugs has actually done anything. There's just as many people using drugs as there were in the 70s before we launched this whole war. It does nothing at all. We spend,
New York,
you know, hundreds
New York stay of home dollars. Of the... New York State, home of the Rockefeller drug laws. The most draconian of drug laws.
Yeah. I mean, we relax those a little bit, but, you know, it's still ridiculous. I mean, you know, especially, okay, you know, people can have problems with things like cocaine and heroin. Okay, fine. But something like marijuana, like, we should just sell that in stores like liquor. I mean, it's safer than alcohol. You know, I mean, people... I mean, I guess in Colorado and Washington, where they legalized marijuana recently, people are afraid, you know, what if they get behind the wheel? I mean, you know, look, when people are stoned and they go driving, they know they're stoned. They drive slow, you know, they take extra precautions. When people are drunk, they're just like, well, I'm Superman. I can do anything, you know? Yeah. And that's what causes a problem, you know, because they don't realize. You know, that they've got to freaking take precautions.
Yeah, so, I mean there's gonna be their share of idiots out there, but I mean, how many cases of drunk driving and people dying because of drunk drivers? They haven't outlawed alcohol. Oh wait, they tried and that didn't work.
Right,
so I mean, let's have a real argument here. Now the argument is in Washington and Colorado are, it's still illegal with the federal government, so you know, don't start buying Cheetos yet, and you know, I mean, how would you handle the federal government if New York State finally decided to cut the bullshit and legalize marijuana?
Well, I think the first thing you've got to realize is, you know, the federal government has limited resources. I mean, actually, during the days of Prohibition, when alcohol was illegal, New York State did that. New York State said, you know what, we're not going to enforce these laws. And the federal government basically rolled over because they realized that, you know, they didn't have the resources to come into New York State and go everywhere and look at everybody and arrest people. I mean, they just, you know, they basically gave up on New York and they went to other states where they weren't going to have a problem. And, you know, New York can do that again. And I hope that, you know, Washington and Colorado have the same philosophy of just basically saying, you know, we're not going to cooperate with you. I mean, it's one thing to legalize marijuana. It's another thing for the various law enforcement agencies to do what New York did during the era of alcohol prohibition and just say, you know, we're not even going to cooperate with you. You know, we're not going to give you any information. If you want us to help in an investigation, then, you know, go to hell. I mean, I hope that's what they do in Colorado and Washington. But, you know, I think, you know, if I was governor, you know, that's what I would say. I would say, you know, not only should this be legal, but, you know, we're not, you know, if the FBI gives us a call and wants to conduct an investigation, we're just going to say, you know what? That's your business, you know. We, you know, why should we do anything?
So, oh goodness, what else is there? Okay, well, we touched on the Occupy movement. What are your thoughts on Occupy Wall Street?
Well, you know, I was really, when this whole Occupy thing first broke, I was really happy about it. I mean, the first I heard about it was from libertarians, because we have always been kind of suspicious of the Federal Reserve and the central bank. You know, I think one benefit of the Occupy movement is it's brought this whole economic issue to the forefront. Now, not everybody in the Occupy movement understands the distinction between the free market and the corporatist policies that have been pursued by the Federal Reserve and, you know, not just here, but other central banks around the world. The thing is, you know, let's just take interest rates, for example. In a free market, the market would determine what interest rates are. Okay, so if there was, you know, more credit, then interest rates would go down because there'd be more people loaning money. And if there was less credit, as we experienced recently, interest rates would go up. You know, we had an economic crisis. You know, people couldn't pay their debts. A lot of them went into default, and no one wanted to loan money. Well, in a free market situation, that would cause interest rates to go up. So if you wanted to borrow money, you would have to pay more interest because of the situation where everybody was not able to pay their debts. But instead of letting the market set the rate, the Federal Reserve stepped in and said, no, we're going to set the interest rates lower because we want to encourage more people to lend money. And, you know, that's completely the wrong approach. We set interest rates lower, people are more likely to go into debt. If they're more likely to go into debt, you're going to get more people that can't pay. And, I mean, it's just a completely backwards way to view things. And what they're really driven by the politicians who want to do anything to get the economy jump-started again. You know, and especially, you know, they want the U.S. government to be able to sell treasury bonds. And obviously, if you have a lower interest rate, then the government, you know, has to pay less on those treasury bonds, and the debt becomes less of a burden to the government. And you have the Federal Reserve essentially, contrary to the market, you know, setting interest rates lower than they should be, so the government doesn't have to pay, you know, as much interest on the debt. And that's a problem. I mean, the basic problem is that we don't have a free market. We have a system where the banks manage things. We have a system whereby, you know, if a corporation fails, the taxpayers bail them out. And if they succeed, the taxpayers, you know, they don't get anything from that success. So the success is private, but the failure becomes public, and we have to bail people out. And we get a situation where, you know, there's no penalty for failure, and if there's no penalty for failure, the whole system breaks down. And I think, you know, there are some people in the Occupy movement that understand that. There are other people in the Occupy movement that are basically just like, I hate capitalism.
Right.
You know, I don't agree with them on that. So I kind of...
Those are most of the people that I've come across at the Occupy Wall Street movement. There was this one gentleman, a Vietnam vet, was calling for socialism. And basically I was telling him, you know, you're going to be punishing the people because they're going to take the money out of the people to pay for all these social programs like they're doing now. I mean, they're not going to punish the banksters, or reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act do you believe in any types of regulation?
You know, I don't think the individual should be regulated. I mean, this is kind of going to the distinction between the free market and corporatism. I mean, when you have like a bank or a corporation, I mean, that is, you know, in sort of an artificial entity. It's like a Frankenstein monster, right? I mean, you don't, corporations aren't born like people, right? The government issues them a charter, and the government says things like, for instance, if you go bankrupt, you don't go personally bankrupt. The corporation goes bankrupt. And it kind of insulates people from risk, which is fine, you know, and people should have the right to cooperate on the business venture. But at the same time, I don't have a problem with there being some kind of regulation of corporate activity, because they actually have an advantage over ordinary people like you and I, who are just, you know, doing business as individuals.
Mm-hmm. So, so if I could ask this one question that's also been in the news, are businesses people?
You know, I would say no. And I know I'm going against some of my fellow libertarians on this, but, you know, like I was just saying, businesses are creatures of the state. A corporation does not exist in the state of nature. You know, and I think it's a gray area. Certainly, I would say the corporations should have Fourth Amendment rights. Like, the government should just be able to come into their office and take their stuff and read whatever's on their computer. But, you know, I don't think they have the same natural rights as people. For instance, First Amendment rights, I don't think they have the unlimited ability to buy as many, like, campaign commercials as they want to. You know, I have to disagree with some of my fellow libertarians on that. You know, if you have the right to spend your own money to buy a commercial saying, like, you know, I hate person X running for office, but you don't necessarily have the right to do that as a corporation. Like, I don't think so.
Right. Okay. Again, I do security for a living. What are your thoughts? I'm going to ask you a broad question and then get more specific. What are your thoughts on self-defense?
I think it's a fundamental right. You should have the right to defend yourself, and you should have the right to defend yourself with whatever weapons that you're going to be facing. You know, I think that, you know, and it's more than that. It's not just personal self-defense. I mean, we fought a revolution to establish this government. You should have, you know, I favor a civilian militia for the defense of this country. You know, I think we should have, like, a small kind of rapid response force if someone attacks us, and then the people of this country should be the basic army. So I think that they should have, you know, they should have the right to, you know, the basic weapons. Like, you know, if you want to own an M16, you should have the right to own an M16 unless you've committed a violent crime and done something that, you know, indicates that you would not be responsible.
So would you like New York to be, well, in New York City, it's hard to get a gun here, but should New York State be a stand your ground state and have a castle law, and also be castle law?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If someone is breaking into your house, then, you know, if they smash the window and they're coming into your house, then it's perfectly reasonable to assume that they do not have kind intentions towards you.
Right.
And
I mean,
you should be free to shoot them.
Right. I mean, I've made this joke, but I mean, I guess this is me exaggerating or oversimplifying. Basically, if someone's breaking into your house, if they turn their back to you, you can't shoot at them. So let's say a criminal doesn't want to get shot at, and they know that you are a law-abiding citizen, they could just turn their back to you and reach behind them and start shooting, and you can't fire back, because if you shoot them in the back,
right,
that's murder. I mean, and there's only so much you can do. You can't really physically remove someone out your house if they break in. You have to call the cops, and hopefully they show up in time. And hopefully they don't, you know, start receiving mail or else, oh, you got yourself a tenant. And that's a whole, you know,
yeah,
that's a whole nother. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's bullshit. If someone breaks into your house, then, you know, that, to me, that should be enough. I mean, if they break your window and then they run at you backwards, you know, you should still be able to shoot them. I mean, that as a means test is not a valid means test. And, you know, in my mind, if they break into your house, if they break the window, if they kick down the door, then they have embarked on a dangerous course of action, and they are responsible for the consequences. You know, if they kick your door down and then they get in your house and they see you have a gun and, you know, they want to try some funny business and turn their back and still try to shoot you, well, you know what? Too bad. You kicked somebody's door down. You broke somebody's window. You broke into their house. You know, you must be responsible for the consequences of your actions. And if halfway through you're like, oh, crap, I'm in danger, well, too bad. I mean, you shouldn't have broken into someone's house in the first place.
Okay, what about, like, the whole Trayvon Martin issue has brought to light the Stand Your Ground issue. What are your thoughts on New York State becoming a Stand Your Ground state?
Oh, I definitely think it should. You know, it to me, it just makes sense, you know?
Right.
Shouldn't be pushed around. You know, if somebody wants to push you around and be a bully, then you should be able to respond.
I mean, in New York, again, I do security for a living, and they say you could only defend yourself enough to get away. I mean, even matching force for force, you're still gonna end up having to spend thousands of dollars on a lawyer to defend yourself, because if you in defending yourself kill the person, you can still be charged with murder.
Right, yeah. I mean, I don't like that either. I mean, the whole use the absolute minimum thing. I mean, the thing is, if you're, and I don't know what situations you get into as a security guard, but I imagine you're defending something, right? If you, why should you yield your space, whether it's your private home or a public street, why should you yield your space to a bully? And I don't see any reason why you should do that. I mean, you have an equal right. I mean, if you're a security guard and you're defending something, it's even more so. But if you're just on a public street, you have a right to be on that street. Why should you have a duty to retreat from some asshole when you have a right to be on a public street just like anybody else? You know, if he comes at you menacing, then, you know, you should menace him back. You know, and it shouldn't be your fault for defending yourself. It should be his fault for fucking with you. And that just makes sense to me.
All right. We got you dumbass in the chat room asked the question, would you advocate to alter New York State pistol permit laws to remove the exemption for New York City?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, New York City, in terms of gun laws, it's like an entirely different state.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you have a pistol permit upstate, it doesn't even count in New York City. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, there was a guy, there's a little old lady from Tennessee that came to New York State and visited the 9/11 memorial, and she had a gun because she was legally allowed to carry it in New York City. She saw a sign that said no guns allowed. You know, went up to a police officer and was like, oh, I didn't know there's no guns around. Like, would you take my gun for me? You know, and they're like, you know, instead of just being like, oh, thank you for, like, complying with the law, they're like, oh, you're lucky. This is law enforcement day. And, like, arrested her and, like, charged her with a felony crime.
She ended up getting off. She ended up getting off. Didn't she?
I haven't followed her particularly. I know there was a Marine that came in who was guarding some gold, and he made a plea bargain. But, yeah. I mean, she got off. I assume that you're correct on that. I mean, if she got off, it was because of the publicity. I mean, they
Yeah.
Even
law enforcement from other states, they can't bring their guns with them. If they're traveling through New York State, they can't have their guns. So you gotta once you enter New Jersey, you gotta FedEx your guns to Pennsylvania if you're going through New York.
Oh, it gets crazier than that. They're even in New York State. There are upstate counties that have a legal defense fund. I forget which county it is, but it's not that far from New York City. And sometimes their officers have to go into New York City, and their police officers get arrested by New York City's police officers for it's for having guns. I mean, under federal law, there's a law enforcement exemption, but New York City is not, doesn't always follow federal law, especially if you're coming through in the airport. But, I mean, there's an upstate county that has a legal defense fund to bail their officers out of jail in New York City for basically doing their job and carrying guns while they're doing it. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's not just out of state. It's even within New York State. And so, yeah, I would totally get rid of that special status.
I mean, unless it seems like unless you're Robert De Niro and you paid the thousands and thousands of dollars, that is the only way you could get a concealed carry permit here.
Oh yeah, and you have to have political connections. Like, I forget who it was who was in a club. I don't know if he's. I think he was a football player of the NFL.
Burris.
Is that him? Yeah.
Something Burris, he shot himself in the foot because he's a dumbass.
Right, yeah, he shot himself. I mean, come on. Dude, come on. He shot himself. Like, is that really a need to prosecute somebody? I mean, first of all, I don't think
Plaxico Burris, he's with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He used to be with the Jets, so yeah, go figure. Plaxico Burris is his name.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, they just wanted to make an example out of him. And because, what did he do wrong except freaking shooting himself,
Yeah, we're charging you with attempted murder of yourself.
And it's not like there aren't like other murders in New York City that the police could devote their resources to solving.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what happened here. Let's get freaking Gary Sinise and the rest of the CSI New York is like, I'm here, and apparently this football player shot himself in the foot, and we're gonna use all these million-dollar techniques to prove that the bullet came from no. All right.
Yeah.
Let's just wait. Yeah. And now let me go make out with my fat Asian wife from Forrest Gump. All right. that's my Gary Sinise impression. So it's horrible, I know. Goodness. Yeah, it's let's see what else we got. Okay, no more questions from you dumb. I'm just gonna.
I know him, by the way. I know him. Like, I don't know. I think it's. I don't know if it's supposed to be you dumbass, but I know him.
Okay. I don't know if he knows him, but okay. Well, I don't know, but it's okay. 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 Let's. Have you ever heard of the men's rights movement by any chance?
I have. I don't know a great deal of detail. I've heard about it.
It involves fathers' rights. It also covers domestic violence against men, how they're barely, well, if any, in New York, battered husband shelters. What are your thoughts on how, better yet, the divorce. How would you handle divorce? I mean, since New York is a no-fault state, which pretty much affects men losing half their stuff. You know, half of everything, leaving them destitute, especially if they have children, and then having to pay these ridiculous amounts of alimony if a woman doesn't work because she got used to having a butler.
Right, I mean,
how would you fix that? And with that said, I cannot wait for the first lesbian divorce. That's gonna make me giggle.
Actually, New York State was like the last state in the country to adopt no-fault divorce. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't have a problem with no-fault divorce. I mean, if two people aren't, you know, compatible with each other, they shouldn't have to provide, you know, extensive list of reasons. But I do have a problem with the fact that, you know, the man is basically guilty, you know, before proven innocent. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we have passed the period of, like, you know, back in the 1950s where the man did the work and the woman couldn't get a job. I mean, women work just as often as men. You know, this is not the Victorian era. The presumption should not be that the man has to, you know, support the woman as well as the child. And if you have a kid, then, you know, it should be 50-50. You know, if both mm-hmm. parents have a job, then they should both be paying child support. But I don't think a man has the responsibility to financially take care of a woman just because they were married. I mean, a woman can get a job just as easily as a man can get a job in today's society, and she should do that.
Oh, that sounds like more war on women talk, Chris. You want to be careful, or else you get Gloria Steinem on your ass, or Gloria Allred.
Yeah, whatever. You know, speaking of Gloria Steinem, she was the one that said, you know, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. But you know what? She got married. So much for that, because I guess she needed a man. I guess that fish needed a bicycle. You know, I mean, that's just such total bullshit. You know, like, I mean, I think women should have the same rights as men. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Well, don't they already?
Yeah. I mean, they do.
Yeah. I mean, that was my understanding. They have the right to vote. They have the right to, have a job and you know, have a family. They have a right to, you know, do whatever they want as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. I mean, I don't understand where this unevenness is. I mean, if somebody, a lot of that has been debunked. Like, a business would be stupid not to hire women, because it would affect their bottom line. I mean, there was a study that came out that if a business just did that, their profits will drop.
Right. Yeah. Because if they don't hire women, they're excluding half of the pool of talented applicants. You know, it just mm-hmm. makes sense. It's like, you know, it's like not hiring black people. Well, you know, then you lose the talents and abilities of, you know, I forget what it is, like 13-16% of the population. I mean, and with women, you know, it's like it's like 51-53% of the population or something like that. Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Discrimination doesn't make sense. And, you know, when you get to issues like family court, it makes even less sense. I mean, there have been issues here in New York State where, you know, The mother is like a freaking crackhead that's been on welfare for the past, you know, for her whole life. And the guy, you know, and freaking owns a small business and is busting his ass and is, you know, trying to do the right thing. And the court, like, doesn't even consider these facts. They just kind of default in favor of the woman. And, you know, that's ridiculous. I mean, it's, you know, people should be viewing these things on the facts at hand and not just kind of have this idea that the guy's in the wrong. Yeah. So if that's what you're talking about with the men's rights movement, I totally support that.
Okay. I know you said that you wouldn't handle, disputes. What's that word you use? I can't believe, business disputes or labor disputes. I'm sorry. There we go. But how would you have handled, Twinkies?
Twinkies, I think the basic problem was not the wages they paid today.
And by Twinkies, I mean the delicious pastry and not a very skinny gay gentleman.
Right, yeah. No, if you do a Google search for a Twinkie alternative, you want to make sure you spell it right.
Right.
I mean, the dispute there was not actually about the wages they were paid today. It was about the pensions and benefits, which is what I was talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
The money is not there. You know, it's nice that you were promised that when you retire, you would get paid so much a year. But, the pension fund has to earn that in the stock market. And if it's not there, they can't pay it.
Right. In the defense of the workers, it was broken down that Hostess was in a world of debt from other bad business practices. So, I mean, shouldn't the workers be protected if it's not their fault? It's the company that has decided to screw the pot, you know?
Right, yeah. I mean, I think what the workers have in that case is they have the right to work for somebody else. I mean, if the management is a bunch of dumbasses and they're making bad decisions, then... you have the option. You go on strike and you say, make these other decisions, or, you even find another job. I'm not all that familiar with the history of it. I do know that Hostess, did extract some concessions from the workers, and, then they also paid their management higher bonuses, which is a dick move.
Colossal.
I totally understand that. It's a difficult decision to make. I think what's going to happen is right now they're in bankruptcy proceedings. Someone is probably going to buy Hostess because the Twinkie brand and the Hostess brand generally, ho-hos and ding-dongs and stuff like that. I mean, it's so well-loved and well-respected across the country. I can't imagine that someone is going to buy the company. So basically, someone's going to buy the company, and they're probably going to fire the dumbasses, and they're going to replace them with people that know what the hell they're doing.
Hopefully.
And then I think that's going to be better for everybody.
Hopefully, because, there's a lot of morbidly obese people out there that, and potheads that need their damn fix,
Right, yeah. No, Little Debbie is not a substitute. I've tried the Little Debbie, whatever they call them, the Twinkie substitutes. It's not the same.
Oh, they raised their prices to like 75 cents. I'm like, it's just not right. I'll just make it myself and I'll sweeten it with stevia so that way I don't have as big a sugar shock.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, actually, it looks like at least right now, it looks like Hostess is going to be bought out by a Mexican company called Grupo Bimbo.
I've had Bimbo bread. Bimbo.
Yeah, I know, dude. The reason I bought Bimbo bread. The reason I bought my first loaf of Bimbo bread is because their name was Bimbo. And I understand, like, they're Mexicans, and that doesn't mean the same thing in Spanish.
No, it doesn't.
But it's like funny. It's like reminds me of like the Wang computer company.
If I could just talk about how much of a fat ass I am. Bimbo makes these pastries of cherry or strawberry filled pastries, like these strawberry filled cookie things that are freaking delicious. So what are JJ cakes? He's like, are there still JJ cakes? What are JJ cakes?
I don't know. What are JJ cakes?
You dumb says that. It was asking that. I don't know what JJ cake. I guess I'm not a professional when it comes to snacking. I guess I'm not that big of a fat ass, I guess. Oh, damn. Oh, well. I guess
I'm more of a carnivore myself. Like, I go for the meat.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Give me
fried chicken.
Oh, yeah. Give me some a jerky to snack on, and I'll do that over chocolate any day. I don't know what that's about, but... all right. Walmart this week. If Walmart employees walked off the job in at least 46 states from 1,000 stores, angry about low pay and poor treatment, and unfortunately, Walmart has announced that there will be a huge career expo to fill those jobs. You could tell how messed up things are by the way a company can openly screw over their employees and still make a huge Black Friday profit. I mean, these poor workers, they went on strike, and the Walmart was still able to make a huge profit. I mean, in New York City, there are groups of people fighting to keep Walmart out of New York City. But unfortunately, from a free market standpoint, they do offer good prices.
Mm-hmm.
How would you settle that dispute?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing is, I mean, Walmart is something I particularly like to talk about because mm-hmm. this is the thing. I mean, you have progressives and people on the left that don't like huge corporations, but they want to raise taxes and increase the number of regulations. And that favors Walmart because, you know, Walmart makes like a fraction of a penny in profit, or they can make a fraction of a penny in profit on everything they sell. And because they sell so many, you know, they can still survive in business. Your mom and pop store has to make more profit on every item to stay in business. So if you increase the taxes, and, you know, you're going to put the mom-and-pop stores out of business first. You increase the number of regulations that people have to deal with. Either someone's going to have to hire a person to understand the regulations. They're going to have to spend their valuable time dealing with it. You know, the same thing. Increase the number of regulations that business has to follow. You're going to put the mom-and-pop stores out of business first. Mm-hmm. So the higher taxes and the more regulations that the progressives favor actually kill the small businesses and increase the power of the Walmarts, and they create the situation where you have a few giant corporations and a massive worker drone. If we had mm-hmm. less taxes and less regulations, we'd have more mom and pop stores and less Walmarts. So I think the solution is to basically empower the free market to get the government, you know, out of their business. And that will actually, you know, increase the competitiveness of small businesses versus Walmart. So I think it's kind of ironic that, you know, you have this progressive drive to have more taxes and regulations, but that actually creates what they say they don't want, which is more Walmart. So I think if you're really concerned about the fate of the average worker, then you should have less taxes and less regulations that empower small businesses. And in America, small businesses create something like 70% of all jobs. So when you lower taxes and you reduce the amount of regulations, you have more mom and pop stores, you have more jobs, you have more people in the community that are not on welfare and that have money. So that
right. I mean, there's this website called WalmartFreeNYC.com. And they are Walmart Free New York City is a coalition of concerned workers and residents, small business owners, community leaders, clergy. Jesus said we don't like low prices. Okay. And elected officials who are committed to increasing economic opportunities, preserving local businesses, and bringing more jobs to communities across New York.
Right. If they really wanted to do that, they should cut taxes and reduce the amount of regulations, and that will bring small businesses and create more jobs.
Yeah. All right. So I guess in closing, I mean, what are your plans if you what are your issues? What are the issues that you are focusing on in your bid to run for governor of New York State?
Well, I mean, I think it would be fair to say, you know, basically, I want to balance the budget. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the states generally have to have balanced budgets, but they still do kind of run the deficit and lean on their operating fund. I mean, I think what New York has to do is what other states have done, is to basically reduce the tax burden, reduce the regulatory burden, which doesn't mean, you know, allow slave labor, but just look at the rules and say, does this really make sense? Or is it serving, you know, some kind of special interest? I mean, basically, we need to get our fiscal house in order. I mean, as a state, the same thing with the federal government. You know, the less money we spend, the better off we are. And that's, you know, that's basically the message that I would take. I mean, on a federal government level, I can get into stuff like the Patriot Act and whatever, but really on a state level, it comes down to money. It comes down to the fact that, you know, every dollar that is spent by the government is a dollar that's not in private hands, and when it's not in private hands, it's not subject to the laws of supply and demand, it's not subject to the laws of competition. So it's, you know, the waste is a lot higher, the corruption is a lot higher. I mean, you know, and it's, I'm not sure what it's like in New York City, but I know here in Rochester, like the school district, it's like the worst school district in the country. I mean, they did, like, somebody, like U.S. News did, you know, like a report, and they ranked, like, you know, 1,000 urban school districts, and we came in like 999 out of 1,000 here in Rochester, you know. And that's because, you know, the jobs are patronage jobs. You know, they hired an executive director of mathematics, and nobody even knows what that person does, but they make a six-figure salary. That's the kind of thing we got to get rid of. We got to get rid of the waste, and we got to just, you know, let people keep their money and let people make their own decisions.
And, okay, you know, where is the wasteful spending, do you see?
Well, it's all over the place. I mean, it's you know, it's hard to know where to start. I mean, I guess, like, I think the director of New York's public libraries makes like $600,000 a year.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, I'm just thinking of that offhand, but I mean, I don't make $600,000 a year. You know, I mean, it's great that there's public libraries, but I mean, those should be managed by the town of whatever and the city of whatever. And, you know, not a province of New York State. And the idea of having someone that oversees libraries that makes that much money is just ridiculous. And, you know, that's just what I can think of offhand. But
especially when everyone's going to Wikipedia for their information.
Right, yeah. You know, it's like I somewhere in my house I have a copy of like Microsoft Encarta, which is like their CD-ROM encyclopedia. And it's just such a complete waste of money nowadays because you can just use Google. Yeah.
I mean, you got Google Books. I mean, especially technology has made everything cheaper. I mean, to get a digital book, I mean, who's really chopping down trees to break their neck over books? I mean, the best sellers are books that are poorly written, like that housewife porn book, 50 Shades of Grey. I mean, that's what they're going for. I mean, I don't see student. I mean, especially if a student has a PC at home, they're not going to the library to do research. They're gonna go to Google, and they're probably gonna have more options. So I mean, I'm not saying libraries are obsolete completely. No, of course not. I mean, they could be. You know, we'll still need a place where reading is, I mean, for lack of a better term, a church for reading. So that way you can keep that passion alive, you know?
Right. But the idea that someone needs to make $600,000-something a year to, you know, to help the libraries operate is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, there's really, I mean, if that, you know, I don't think the market would dictate that much money. So, right. Okay. How would you handle, well, first question, you know, going across the state, across the river, into Jersey, what do you think of Governor Chris Christie and how he's handled the teachers unions, and would you copy him?
Well, you know, I don't know that much about it, so I can't really speak to that authoritatively. I did see a movie several months ago about New Jersey, and I know that they have, like, way too many school districts and taxing authorities, and they have, like, basically one school is itself a school district, and that doesn't make any sense at all, because they have, like, a superintendent for one school, and, and then under him is a principal for one school. That could certainly be changed, but I don't actually know what Chris Christie is doing, so I can't, you know, make a comment on that.
Okay. Someone in the chat room, Casey, he asks, what is your take on what Iceland is doing with their country and how they kick the bankers out?
Oh, Iceland is awesome, man. Definitely. No, I've been following Iceland. They did not bail out anybody at all. Mm-hmm. You know, and people were like, oh my God, if you don't bail out the banks, your country will be destroyed. And it turns out they're actually doing better than anybody in Europe. You know?
Well, is Iceland part of Europe?
Well, I guess so. I mean, in terms of, like, the continent. I don't know if they're part of the European Union or whatever. But basically, I mean, what they did is they said, we're not going to bail out the bank. We're just going to let them fail. And everybody was like, you can't do that. And they did it anyway. And they're doing fine. And so, you know, I'm totally down with that. That's what we should have done in this country, too. It's just let the banks fail. And they would have been like hosted. It's not like the banks would have failed and then, like, you know, all the money would be lost. It'd be like Hostess, and they'd be bought out by somebody else, and they'd be reorganized, you know, and the failed management team would be replaced by a successful management team. And that's what Iceland did, and it worked out fine.
Yeah, we need a fight club type situation where we go around, harassing these big business guys and saying, please don't fuck with us or we're going to blow up your buildings. I'm just joking. Let me. I'm kidding. No. But you get what I'm saying. I mean, at the end of Fight Club, they took out the credit card industries, so that way there was no more debt. I mean, I'm not advocating terrorism, but you know, you get what I'm saying.
Right.
So anything else you wanna add before we say goodbye to the people?
I mean, I think we've covered a lot. I mean, we covered the basic, you know, spending beyond our means, the basic, like, civil liberty freedom thing. You know, I mean, I guess since this is Cross Shot Radio and you're uncensored, you know, let me just tell you, you know, the first thing that made me realize I was a libertarian is back when I was a kid, I realized that, you know, I read about our government training these death squads in Central America, and, like, you know, it was El Salvador or something, like death squads that our government trained went and, like, freaking raped and killed, like, four American nuns. And I was like, okay, wait a minute. And of course, this was a cause for outrage. But I'm like, wait a minute. So, okay, we can go in and we can kill all these innocent people, and no one gives a shit, all right? But if you put your dick in the wrong place, all of a sudden, that's a cause for outrage. And that's the point when I realized, A, the human beings are a bunch of fucking idiots, and that, B, that every single authority that exists on this planet Earth does not deserve my respect. because it is all based on hypocrisy and bullshit. You know, I mean, when we finally realize that the deaths of our fellow human beings are more important than where you put your dick, that is when we as human beings will achieve a mature society. And that is the message that I would like to leave with your listeners.
All righty. So where can people get more information on you? How can people help you get the nomination from the New York Libertarian Party? What can they do?
Well, that's going to be decision in 2014. We're going to hold a convention, the delegates to the convention who are going to be members of the Libertarian Party of New York will take a vote. I'm pretty sure I'm going to get the nomination, if Ron Paul moves to New York and decides to run for governor, you know, that could be something different. But in that case, you know, I would just let Ron Paul win. If you want to help me get the nomination, join the Libertarian Party of New York, go to the convention in 2014. But I think, you know, the larger question is, how can I get the vote? I'm pretty sure of getting the nomination. What I need to do is get 50,000 votes. If we get 50,000 votes, right, I don't have to win. If we get 50,000 votes, you know, according to the laws of New York State, that changes the Libertarian Party from being, you know, just a bunch of cranks to an official political party. And then, you know, we can put whoever we want on the ballot. Like, instead of having to go out and get, like, 1,500 signatures, like I have to do in Rochester, like, we can just basically, like, say, we want this guy on the ballot. And so what that basically means is, you know, we can run 100 times, 200 times as many candidates. We can run candidates in, like, every town and city. And then at that point it becomes not just we're getting behind a few candidates, but we're running all these people. And somebody's going to win. So that's what I'm hoping to do as governor. I don't actually have to win. I just have to get a high score, basically. And so if you can vote for me and tell your friends and neighbors to vote for me, that's the important thing.
All righty. So, last question. Israel, support it?
Blanket? No. I mean, the thing is, you've got two different peoples over there. They hate each other. They've been fighting, not just for so many decades. I mean, if you really get into the religious stuff, I mean, this goes back hundreds of years, thousands of years. It's never going to end. I don't favor one side or the other. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we are not going to resolve this anytime soon. And, you know, it's silly to think that we're going to do that. You know, in my opinion, we should just get the hell out of the Middle East. You know, there's no point getting caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, how many of those Facebook postings have you said, oh, we should stand for the Palestinians, all these Facebook activists?
Yeah, I don't think we should stand for either side. I think both sides are just determined to kill each other. And we should get out of the way. I mean, we send something like 7 times as much foreign aid to the Arabs as to the Israelis, and then we turn around and say that we support Israel. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense at all.
Oh yeah, we pay every nation in the Middle East to not fight. Right. I mean, we don't. I read this article in Metro New York. By 2035, we will be energy independent. Oh, we can be energy independent by 2035 with our own oil. And that's no joke. So, but anyways, so what's your website again?
www.vote-for-chris.net.
So that's vote-chris.net. Okay, I'm sorry. What is it again? Go ahead. Just fire it off.
All right. Vote-for-chris.net. Vote-for-chris.net. We dash it.
Vote for Chris.
You can put www in if you want, but it doesn't matter.
Really? Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So, Chris, I thank you for coming on. Thank you for putting up with my crap.
Oh, no and, problem. Yeah, no, thanks for the opportunity. It was fun.
Yeah, I mean, you're welcome to come back on. If you want to come back on, be like, hey, you fat bastard, I need to come back on. And I'll be like, all right.
Well,
just you have an open invitation now, so do not be please do not be a stranger, and let's fix shit. You know what I mean?
All righty.
Let's thank everyone for listening. This has been the Crockshot Radio Show. I'd like to give a big shout out for everyone that's been listening. Stargate to Eden, Trite Static, Anon, Tammy, Casey. You dumbass in on TalkShoe. Thank you for your awesome questions and thank you for listening. So this has been the Crockshot Radio Show, and as always, from my house to your house, mahalo.
That's the end of my show. Donk.
All right, Chris, are you still there?